Welcome to the T3 Observations for Sunday, December the 19th, 2010. As you can see from the front page, I am going into my year-end holiday schedule, I guess it is. It's getting even in green, and you can see that we'll be doing a we'll be on holiday from Monday to January 1st. And I will do a quick update for the T3 observations here on the 26th, which is a Sunday, because I like to just do everything on Sunday after I've had a chance to look at the end of the week. And then we'll that will be just a quick update. It's just to correct anything that I got wrong in this update. And then on January 2, we'll resume the full progress. You also see that instead of doing the parts, I have T-Theory Summary for and High Yield Bond Investment Outlook is my first part here, and then we're doing the Treasury Bonds. We go down then to the Gold Investments, and finally we do the Standard & Poor's Investment Outlook. And I won't be taking any, I'll be starting to do my tutorials as we get into the new year, so I have a little space down there. And I have the usual things for thank you and so forth, but I don't have an address given here yet, because I expect that I will now, as a preliminary to do the tutorials, I will link back onto my old tutorials, and at that point, if you want to go that far, we'll talk about the tutorials. But other than that, I said my forecast is pretty well set, and I don't have any particular reason to believe that they're incorrect. I've been doing this for a long time now, and we have made a T. We discussed that in the using the McClellan oscillator, because it gave a much broader scope. And I will take my chart, which is in the bottom section here, and I will increase it there, and you get the same results basically, except it's a little bit easier to confirm T's in volume than it is in breadth, because the breadth will tend to saturate on an initial rally of a T, whereas the volume can explode, and you can get a sort of a breakout that which you want to talk about. I adopted this because this sort of scenario, the way we go through this, because it's the historic way we use the best bond strategy, and the chart for this section just has the fidelity capital and income, which is the capital and income is a sort of a strange name, but it really should be interpreted as capital gains and income. So what they're doing is they're looking at marginal cases to try to buy more of the bonds when they're deeply oversold and the interest rate is very high. So in this chart, which shows the price dividend adjusted, you can see that down in the late 02, early 03 probably, you were yielding over 10%, and in this last low in the 08, 09 period, it was over 12%. Actually, it can spike up to be quite in these bonds, you can actually spike up to 18% sometime, but it won't stay there very long. Because once you go, the historical return for common stocks up to the year 2000 is, with dividends included, is basically in the 10 to 12% area. So value investors will tend to want to jump onto this thing anytime they can find the example. The trick is not to lose money while you're going down there. Okay, otherwise you're caught in a trap. But you can see coming out of this particular zone from the recent low, that was in the 12 to 15% category. You've now dropped back to the 6% yield. So this area is becoming less and less desirable as far as investment and yield is concerned. But when you look at the long-term treasuries, which are the scale right is at 4.5%, and the yield on the S&P 500, which is 1.8%, and the negative yield on real estate. It's best of a bad situation. So I think that's probably the recent way to state it. In the general picture, which we have, you go through the four parts and you can get the S&P 500, which you're interested in the stock market. The thing about the stock market is that it's basically on a yield basis, it's a loser. Okay, except that the Federal Reserve is creating a new stimulus, which they're desperately trying to keep the economy going, the stock market kind of going up, but they're not spending a lot of money to try and make it explode to the upside. It just trying to keep things alive in what we would call the 4-year cycle, which we've discussed before. But it's basically you get 2 years up and 2 years down, and you know, they can do it now. They can get away with it now because we haven't gotten to the 2 years up from the early March of 09 low. And you got to get an extension in the life of the bull market, which is very mature and has lots of risks. Their policy of spending the money cuts the risks down, but it doesn't allow them to make a huge rally on the upside either. So it's probably is a trading range with a bullish bias, and there's going to be a lot of flopping around on that, and you just have to go with it. As far as the specifics are concerned, I put those down in the S&P 500 because you have to look at the details. But I would just say that T theory is very specific as to when you made a T, whether the T is bullish or bearish, and all that other stuff. And I've taken care of all of that stuff, and I don't see any problems with it. The strategy you got for investment strategy is, once you get into that kind of a mode, you got two ways to go. One is to go with the leaders, and the other one is to try and pick up the laggards. And there's certain people will try to find moves to say that the Federal Reserve is trying to keep things alive, but they'll always go down and find something that's dead that's going to have a perk up. I prefer to do the things with the leaders and and put up with the fact that they're usually they're overbought, and just buy them. You have to wait for a new surge to come in and so forth. But it's different strokes for different folks, and so that's what it is. I don't think there's anything to say about the nature of the T's otherwise, other than the fact that if you look at the sentiment indices, you'll find out there's bullishness on the part of small investors. If you look at the RIDEX funds, I've been told that everybody's in the long type funds, and the inverse funds, nobody's in there, and it's skewed that way. And that's a warning sign. But when you put in the fact that the Federal Reserve has decided that they want to do it, the oldest rule in the stock market is that you don't fight the Fed, and the big institutions won't fight it. So the traders will always fight it, okay? Because they're turning on a dime, and if they see everybody's in, they want to go out, and if they see everybody's going out, they want to get back in again. But collectively, traders don't have any money relative to the S&P 5, relative to the Federal Reserve's ability to write unlimited money. And so this is a case where you just push it, but the 13th advanced line is going to push back on you. And that battle is going to continue out into the general area, which would be at least to April, maybe into May, before this where you get the next critical juncture. Most everything will probably go up, but it probably won't go up very well. It's not going to explode. There's no explosions left in this way. I do mention a concept in the discussion that goes through here, as we call front-loaded T's versus back-loaded T's versus uniform-loaded T's. That just depends on whether when you make a new T, is all the money available right at the beginning? You get this big lump. If the Federal Reserve had put a big lump stimulus program where they said, we're just dumping $1 trillion into the market, and this T was confirmed, as discussed in the fourth section, he says you would have had a huge explosion because the money would immediately impact the market. That's called a front-loaded T. But what they're doing is they're doing a pacing. They're doing stimulus every month. They put in some money, and so that you get this more or less steady flow that is not dramatic on the upside, but is good enough to stop corrections. So the criteria is, and that's called the uniform loaded T. Gold, as I discussed in the third section, is always a backloaded T. They start slow, and then they come up into a feeding frenzy. So you have to take that part into consideration and say that just because you can't see a big explosion doesn't mean that they're not writing the checks. They are. It's just the only way you're going to see it in an overbought condition is that it has resistance to downside. And that so that's the critical issue over the next 2 weeks. So we're on a holiday schedule, and I have a criteria that you don't go back below the breakout point, and that's what you have to watch for on the downside. But I don't really, I've been doing this long enough to know that the pattern is okay. Okay, it's just not spectacularly bullish. It's just marginally bullish, but it's fairly secure. I think, as far as the interpretation of the risk reward ratio. You don't have much risk on the downside, but you don't have a lot of reward on the upside either. It's just a case with it. What they're doing is they're playing for time, and in that scenario, you just got to pick the right stock groups, and you can't go wrong with a high yield bond fund, because most of the people that are looking for kind of yields have been beaten up by the stock market, so they don't want to do that. So they won't go that way, and the yield is too low. So as it says, that, you know, they should have bought that when it was 12%. Okay, when the yield was 12%, that would have been a better deal. Okay, but you can't go back there. The only thing you can do is plan for the future, and the future is that the high yield bond funds will still be as good as anything else. But as we see in the next section, the Treasury bonds are approaching a period in which their yields are coming up to a very high level, or kind of a high level, which would be for a quality issue, is 5%, and that's the equivalent for the for FAGEX going down to a low in price, where you had like a 12% option. It's a different market. What's good is different as for, in terms of yields are concerned, but you do want to start paying attention to the Treasury bonds as the alternative, because if you get a couple more pushes on the yields of the Treasury long-term Treasury bond, you will get into a historically attractive area, and there'll be some doubts about it. But that was the same; it was true when we were down at the 12% area in the late 08, early 09 period. Yeah, you said, people says, yeah, the yield's 12%, but they're all gonna die. Because they're junk bonds, okay? Well, you got to find the reverse in the situation, but that situation has to be tracked now, because when the four-year cycle turns over, you got a two-year bear market into the 2012-2013 area, and the alternative will show up as being Treasury bonds. But it's too early to do that, but it's not too early to talk about it. Okay, that's it for the first section. Now we go on to take a look at the Treasury bonds.